Welcome to the Break Your Bullshit Box podcast, where excuses aren't tolerated and results are earned through authenticity, vulnerability, and a commitment to excellence. My name is Amber Furman, success architect, attorney, and NLP trainer. If you're ready to bitch slap the bully in your brain, overcome the bullshit that holds you back, and design the life and success you've always wanted, then it's time for you to break your bullshit box and step into designing life and success on your terms. Welcome back to another episode of the Break Your Bullshit Box podcast. Today, I had an amazing interview with Martin Saloma. Martin has this incredible career in corporate culture. He has become a life coach. He has come up with this amazing warrior to warrior strategy. We had a fantastic interview, and I'm super excited for you to dig into that. Just a reminder before we do that this episode is brought to you by Success Development Solutions and the Break Your Bullshit Box Academy. If you are somebody who is ready to start to design your life and take your life to the next level, we put together a free success blueprint guide for you to get started on that. If being able to really set goals to decide what it is you want to start to move in the direction that you want your life to go is important to you, then head over to blueprint.successdevelopmentsolutions.com and grab your free copy today. And without further ado, let's jump into this interview with Martin. Martin, thank you so much for coming on the show with me today. I'm so excited to have you here.
Thank you so much, Amber. I'm very excited to be here. I know we're going to have an animated, fun discussion together.
So I'm really looking forward to digging in. I think we're going to have a lot of synergies, which is going to be a lot of fun. What do you know about the podcast and what do you want me to tell you?
I know very little, which is okay. Fine. I've known from what I read on Podmatch.
Okay.
So that's what I know. I don't need to know anything. It's perfect. More about what you need to know about me and what you want me to share. I'm very easy. I'm easygoing. I like having conversations. I don't like interviews.
I don't do interviews.
It to be conversational. I saw you just released a book in August.
I did, yes.
Yes, congratulations. I released mine in June. Warrior to warrior.
Oh, two. Okay, that makes more sense. I like that a lot. I think that, that's more clear. I think that a lot of the audience is going to resonate with that. So let me tell you a little bit about who listens to this podcast so that okay. You can craft your answers within kind of the box of the person that might be listening.
Perfect.
And I'm going to talk less about demographics and more about psychographics because they kind of spread across different demographics.
Sounds good.
So,
to me.
The pain points that we really dig into on this podcast are things that I'm sure you have no expertise in at all, like, imposter syndrome and fear and, analysis paralysis and comparison and all of the things. So right. The people who listen to this podcast are either just starting their business journey. They've never been involved in anything before. They don't know where to start. And every time they start to take those steps, they realize how much they don't know. And right. Then what I lovingly like to call the itty bitty shitty committee pops up in their head and starts having a board meeting about how incompetent they are. Right. And then they end up giving up because everybody else has it more figured out than they do.
Oh,
the other, yeah.
The I've never met anyone like that.
No, nobody. The other side of the coin is actually where I used to be. So they're professional service providers who have completed a high level of education, doctors, lawyers, pharmacists, they have graduate degrees, MBAs, whatever it is, they've dedicated a lot of time, a lot of money, a lot of their life to get into where they are. And it was supposed to create this freedom that it didn't actually create. And now they're trying to figure out which puzzle piece they missed along the way that created the hell they're living in now. But they can't describe it as that because right. Everybody around them sees them as the most successful people in their circle. So every time they start to express how unfulfilled they are, somebody in their circle says, how could you possibly feel that way? Because look at all that you have. And then they think something's wrong with them.
Right.
So those are the two types of people that we speak to on this podcast.
Wow. Fantastic. I can definitely craft my message around all of that, because that's really being an actual professional. I am a life coach. Okay. I'm a certified life coach, gone through the whole program and all that. So I'm not necessarily a lawyer or a doctor, but I had, up until now, I've had that thing of like, well, everything's in place. Why is it not working? Right. And over the last 6 months, to a year, things have started to click into place. And a big part of why that has happened is because I figured out what was wrong. What was that missing piece? So it's something that I've just started to develop. I've put together a program for entrepreneurs, coaches, people like that, who are looking to get to seven figures within 2 years guaranteed. Okay. And I do that because I have a comprehensive program that I put them through, right? Where it's whole hand-holding. But the beauty about my program is I've been in enough of these programs that they say they're done for you and done with you. But really what they are is they're done to you.
Right? You make my skin crawl.
Right.
Give me I all know your that's money, the one. Yeah.
And we'll show you what it's all about. So what I've done is I created a real done-for-you program that's result-driven, meaning that I only get paid 12.5% of my program up front. The rest doesn't come unless we deliver you success.
You know, it's so interesting.
When you hit financial goals, then you pay.
Yeah, it's so interesting that you've structured it that way. I love that structure. The downside to it, which I'm sure that you've built in some safeguards for, are the people who aren't going to do the work, right? The people that aren't going to follow through. And so when I built my course, I actually have something very similar in, but I do it backwards. So they get the financial commitment, they give the financial commitment, and then there's a money back guarantee that they can get. But in order to get the money back guarantee, they've got to show me the work that they've done to say isn't working for them, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, so often the done to you thing, man, that really like grinds my gears so much. And I say this all the time in my training. So I'm a certified trainer of neurolinguistics programming, and I love that world. There's so many offshoots that are NLP based that, and this is one of my biggest problems with the conference industry, is that you don't get the information behind the scenes, right? So what happens? Yep. You go to this conference, you get all pumped up, you get all excited, you think of all the things that you're going to do when you leave, and then you get let back into the world with no support and no next steps. And then when, you know, 6 months goes by and you're feeling down on your luck again, and you're like, man, I need to feel good. What am I going to do? Well, let me go back to this conference that made me feel good last time.
Right.
So when I do my trainings, that's exactly what I say to them, is like, you might have done something that's NLP based before, but that's a done to you, not a done with you process, because they don't tell you how they're doing it, right? They don't tell you how to get the results. And I don't want people to come back because they need me. I have a lot of people that stay in my circle because they want to grow and they want to move forward. But it's a huge red flag to me when somebody's like, I need you to fix this problem. That is me being inserted as a solution to something that I don't want. And that's very unhealthy. So I love that you've connected it that way.
Thank you. Thank you. And I call it a risk reversal strategy. Just like, because now the risk is reversed. And I tell them, really, there's two guarantees I'm going to make for you. One, there's going to be chaos. So get ready. And two, if you don't give up on yourself, I don't give up on you. So if you're giving up on yourself, even then I'm not giving up on you, because I've built into my program, besides all the nuts and bolts and how to do things, you know, the blueprints and the templates, there's also my course, which is a video course on shifting your mindset from lack to abundance, which is some things I talk about. And you talked about something very interesting on when I was looking at Podmatch about excuses, right? So I'll give you a little tease. I look at it as excuses as people who rationalize. Okay. Yep. But to me, rationalize is really two words.
Rationalize. I love it. I love it. Yeah. That's really where the book comes from. Break Your Bullshit Box. Because I used to get up and talk about comfort zones and authenticity and getting out of your comfort zone and courage and being willing to do all of that stuff. And then I would talk about like who you are and your identity crisis. So before this show, it was called More Than Corporate. Which was all about the identity crisis that goes along when we try to create something new for ourselves. And I would talk about all these things and I'm like, okay, but I'm missing a step. Like none of this matters if we don't talk about what happens up here, if we don't talk about the justifications that we give ourselves. And there's a fantastic book, if you haven't read it, by John Levy called You're Invited.
Oh, okay. I don't know that one. I'm going to write it down.
It's so good. John Levy talks, so he hosts some of the most influential dinners in the world. Oh, wow. And they're at this point, they're by invite only. And they're like massively successful people are at these dinners. And he only has two rules. You cook dinner together and then you sit down and you eat it together. And his two rules are that you can't tell anybody who you are or what you do until you sit down to eat. So you can tell them your name, but you talk about who you are as a human.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not who you are as a success. Right.
Yeah, I love
it. And it's meant to combat that thing that we all do as humans, where we put people in places on the totem pole of where we think they belong.
Nice.
And then you get to know them and you realize that, you know, they're just people.
Yeah. Fantastic.
So in this book, he talks about our conscious mind and our unconscious mind and the way that your conscious mind is your rationalizer. Your unconscious mind is where your emotions are at, your beliefs, all of that stuff. We know all of this, right? The way he describes it, though, is that the conscious mind is a rider and the unconscious mind is an elephant. And the rider is arrogant enough to believe that he has that elephant trained and that elephant will go anywhere that it wants to go. But if push comes to shove and instinct kicks in and that elephant wants to go somewhere that that rider doesn't want to go, he has no control over it.
Right.
And that's what rationalization looks like in our head, right? Mm-hmm. We're like, I want to go on a diet. I want to lose weight. Awesome. You know, eat kale, work out. I'm good to go. But I really deserve that Reese's peanut butter cup, right? If I have the Reese's peanut butter cup, then I'll be more focused to do better later.
Exactly.
But what's life if I can't enjoy it? And now we're rationalizing where our elephant or our unconscious mind is going to go anyways.
Right,
so I love that you did that like rational lies. I think that's fantastic.
We lie to ourselves that it's rational to eat the Reese's cup.
Yeah.
When you
my editor is going to have a fantastic time piecing this all together. So Seth, I love you and thank you for your magic work. How did you get into this? So you mentioned that, you know, this idea of a life coach, which is such a, it's a term that there's really, really, really good people out there who are life coaches.
They are.
And so many people have called them that and then isn't that there's this unrealistic identity of what a life coach is and does. Right.
Right. Yeah.
And it's like most things, it's been the butt of jokes for society for a while.
Yes.
So I say that to say that people don't wake up and be like, man, I want to be a life coach when I grow up. So how
did not do that
for you?
Right. And that's why earlier I mentioned to you that I'm a certified life coach. Because I know that there's people out there that could go to a weekend thing and say, oh, I'm a life coach. No, I spent basically close to a year of my life getting certified, you know, which really makes a difference for me because I know what the hell I'm doing. But I didn't wake up one day and say, oh, yeah, you know, that's what I want to do with my life. It came upon me thanks to the wonderful year of 2008.
Yeah, that was the pre-COVID disaster, right? The millennials of, or Gen, what is it? Z, Gen Z has COVID as their crash. us Gen Xers and early millennials have 2008 as our crash. So
exactly.
How did 2008 play into your decision?
So yeah, so in 2003, okay, I was just closing a business and my wife said, okay, you're looking for something to do. And I really wasn't, but she insisted I was. Because I had residual income. Okay. So it's not like I was starving for something to do, but of course I was going to find something eventually. And she said, and I'm now, I started playing tennis and I could never find any tennis time, any courts available because there's not enough courts around. Why don't we think about opening up a tennis center? So I'm like, okay. So I got to tell you, Amber, here's the issue. I am not an athlete. So much so that you could call me an athletic supporter.
An athletic supporter. I have a guy in my network that calls himself a former fake athlete, and I love it.
That's great, right? But so I'm like, okay, let's look into this. So we start doing the research, and we find a company that will do a feasibility study for us. Comes back to us and he says, yeah, it's a great idea. 7-8 courts in this area would be great to supplement what else is going on here. He said, but I got to tell you the honest truth. If you're just going to open up tennis, you're not going to make a lot of money. Well, okay, I'm really not into this to make a little money. What do I got to do? He says, you've got to have the ancillary things. You've got to make it a health club and put all those other things in so that you can have the income from the membership. And so we started looking for land and we found the land. Then we had to go out and find an architect and an engineer and the money for it and all this. And what started out as, okay, we'll open up 7 or 8 tennis courts turned out to be, was going to be over 100,000 square foot building that would have tennis courts, basketball court, full gym, you know, with all the top line equipment, a spa, everything you could imagine in it. It was going to be state of the art. All right, great. We found the land. We found all this. We're going to, and then we have to go and get approved by the state and the city. All right.
Okay.
You're smiling as somebody in the legal world knows that that's the fun part.
Yeah. The nice and easy part. What could possibly go wrong?
One other thing. We walk in there. We love it. However, you got to do this. You got to change this. You got to do this. And then they go, okay, now go hire a civil engineer to find out what the effect's going to be on traffic. Did you put in enough parking and all this? We're like, wonderful. And all this time I'm going to the bank and I'm going to the investors and I'm saying, okay, this is where we are. And like the bank is like, great. When you get the approval, come back to us. Now, remember, this is 2005, 2006, 2007. When this is all happening, I'm going to the banks. And the banks at that time were lending money like you were going to Costco and you were meeting the old women at the end of the aisles and they were giving you the samples.
It's like the old, my age, my generation, it's like the sign up for this credit card and you'll get this t-shirt age.
Exactly.
Or better, buy this t-shirt and you'll get this credit card age.
Exactly. So I'm like, okay, great. And so I'm keeping them in the loop the whole time. And I have investors and I'm borrowing money and I keep going to the bank and refinancing my house because they're like, oh yeah, that house, we'll just reinvest. We'll reassess it now and give you a higher loan and, you know, loan to value, blah, 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 all this stuff. Great. Cool. Now I'm $3+ million into this. And in the summer of 2008, we finally get all the approvals. I'm like, okay, great. I don't know what's going on in the world. Nothing's really starting to happen then. It's July, August of 2008. I walk into the bank. I'm like, okay, we're ready. I'm $3 million in. There's a $15 million project waiting for you to fund. And they're like, yeah, we're not funding right now. I'm like, wow. Oh. What are you talking about? Well, things are starting to slow down now. I'm like, that's no good for me. You told me you'd be there. Well, if you were last year, we would have had the money for you. A month later, Mr. Bernie Madoff comes out of the woodworks.
Oh, no. Right?
Subprime loans. The world falls apart, as we all know, like a house of cards. literally like a house of cards. Somebody touched one card and they all fell down. Unfortunately, I was the joker on the bottom of the deck, not laughing.
Oh, no.
Overnight, I was wiped out. I stopped paying my mortgage, like pretty much many other people, especially in New Jersey, where I was living at the time. I stopped paying my car payments. I had to figure out how I was going to live each day to the next day. I leveraged myself with what I was doing. I had taken a gamble. At the time, it was a calculated, low risk, high return value until the world fell apart. Okay. So I was like, okay. About 2-3 months later, my son says, "Dad, look outside." They were towing away my BMW. And there it went.
Oh, no.
Now, I'm lucky because I lived in New Jersey, and there were so many foreclosures that it took them years before they finally moved on the foreclosure. We got the foreclosure, but they're like, okay, we'll forget about these guys. Their loan to value of the house, the equity in the house is not worth it, whatever their reason was. All right. Well, Amber, I got to tell you, for about a year, I was in a deep depression.
I bet.
Yeah.
I bet. Okay. It's so common, you know, and I was actually just talking to a group of attorneys about this last weekend, that like life, we have this amazing way of convincing ourselves that everything's okay when external results are going well. And true success, in my opinion, is the ability to be aware of your value. I'm not going to say comfortable, because struggling is never comfortable.
Right.
To know that you as a person don't change whether your bank account has $1,000 in it or, you know, $1 million in it. But that's not how we were raised.
No,
right?
It's not. We were not.
We were raised that this amount of money that we were going to make in the world dictated what type of respect and deservingness we were going to have. And that's such a harmful rhetoric.
It totally is. And you know, we were growing up with the word failure being mm-hmm. the worst word in the world. There was nothing worse than failure. Now I look at failure as a new way to learn and grow, because at my lowest point, which is where I was where I did my deepest soul searching and introspection.
Mm-hmm. And isn't it funny how that lowest point is never what you expect it to be?
Yeah.
Right. Like you can look through the moments in your life and you're like, man, that one probably should have hurt more. And that one probably should have been a little bit lower. You know, people are so surprised to hear me say that my dad's death wasn't the lowest point in my life.
Wow.
And the reason that it wasn't was because I still had an exit plan, right? A six-figure income and a law degree was going to take all the pain away from my dad's death.
Right.
So I missed him. I still wanted him back. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that it wasn't a hard day, but my rock bottom was the moment that that exit plan failed and I had to deal with the grief of his death, right?
Because
it just got put aside. So, I mean, it's interesting how, you know, for you, I'm sure that if you look back at your life, there were a ton of heartbreaks and horrible losses that you had in your life that could have at any point in time been the house of cards that you're talking about from
yes.
a mental health standpoint.
Yes, absolutely.
What was it that you think made this one the one that finally caused you to go, oh shit, this one's different?
Because I it was a financial reason, you know, and again, it's that whole thing that we were, you know, taught and put into our heads that, you know, money is the measure of success.
Mm-hmm. Right?
So if that's the measure of success and I just lost $3+ million of my money and other people's money, then I now have to figure out how to make whole however I could with nothing there. It was hard.
And how did you do that?
So I have to say, first thing is I was very lucky to have a very supportive family. Some of my money I had borrowed was from my mom, okay, who my father had passed a few years before that. And one of the things I had was residual income. And at the end of the day, when all the dust settled, I had to pay her back. So I had to give up my shares. And what they were doing in the meantime was taking the money that I was that I would have gotten and paying back some of the people that I borrowed from to make them whole. Right. So, but here I am, I'm in this depression for about a year. And I was like, I got to get out of this depression. I went through therapy and I went through coaching. And when I came out of it, I was like, you know what? I have an opportunity to reinvent myself right now and recognize that I never loved being a businessman. I never loved it. I did it because that's what I was told I was supposed to do. Mm-hmm. Right. That was the world I came from. So here I am. I'm going, okay, what am I going to do now? Well, what do I love doing? Well, one of the things I love doing was being involved in community events and community organizations. And I was always a leader in them because that's what I learned from my parents. They were leaders and I learned how to be a leader just like them in a positive way. Great stuff. So much so that people would come in and say, well, I can't do what you're doing, Martin. I'm like, but I don't want you to do what I'm doing. I want you to give me whatever you got and let's figure it out and see how you could help the organization. And I started to dawn on me now that I was doing this, that I was coaching them. That, oh, so that's a great way to help people. Let me coach them to show them that, because I already had the ideas of it. So I started to look for coaching schools and I did my research and I found one that I really loved that, as I told you earlier, was almost a year of training before I got my actual certification. So here I am. And just when I think things can get worse, you're laughing. I don't know. Maybe you read my book already. I don't know. But here I am. And I'm like, okay, I found a school. I'm going to go there. I go to the school and I say, look, I have no money. And if I try to go get financing, it's not going to work. But if you let me pay you X amount every month, I promise you'll get the payments. And he said to me, you got it, but you're not getting your certification, the actual certification, until you're paid off. I'm like, okay, that's a fair deal. Because I sold myself to the guy. Because I know. So here I am ready to go. It's about 2 months beforehand. It's my 24th wedding anniversary. Okay, which happens to fall out on the day after Valentine's Day.
Oh man. Did you do that intentionally so you didn't have to remember 2 days?
No, I'm very good with remembering. I don't even know how we picked that date. But anyway, here it is, my 24th wedding anniversary. And my wife says, I'm done. I want a divorce. So just when I thought I couldn't get any lower, there it was.
You know, it's interesting. In my book, one of my favorite lines, and people send me snippets of this all the time. I have a point in my book where it says, if you think life can't get any worse, just wait. The universe will say, hold my beer. Because that's exactly what happens, right?
There it is.
I learned a long time ago never to challenge the universe by asking, man, can it get any worse? Because it'll be like, hold on for just a minute.
Yeah, yeah.
Let me show you how much worse life could be.
Exactly. So for me, the first thing that came to my head is, why does everything keep happening to me? And what I've now come to realize is that is an excuse. That is a cop-out. When I say something like, why is everything happening to me? It's me blaming everybody else for my lot in life.
What did I just hear recently? I just heard somebody say, the person who blames others hasn't started the journey. The person who blames themselves is halfway there. And the person who blames no one is on their way to success.
I love it. That's beautiful. But so now what I say is, instead of things are happening to me, I say things happen through me.
I like that.
For me, through me.
Right? I like that a lot.
I'm responsible for what happens.
Yeah. I'm really curious. You mentioned coaching and therapy, and this is an interesting topic for me because I have also been through them both.
Right.
And I got different things from each one. And so before I ask this question, I want to make clear that I'm not a doctor. I'm not a psychologist. I would never suggest that somebody avoid seeing a psychologist.
Never.
Or a therapist.
Right.
I'm curious for you, what were the benefits that you got from therapy versus the benefits that you got from coaching? And what were the value that you took from each one?
So it's interesting. I learned in coaching when I went to the school I went to, which is called IPEC, unbelievable school. And if you go there, if you could decide to go there, guys, give tell them my name, and I'll get a nice referral for it. I don't know if they'll give you a good seat. No, I'm kidding. But anyway.
Right.
But what I learned, and they said, therapy takes you from dysfunctional to functional. Coaching takes you from functional to optimal. Mm. So what I needed for therapy was to get out of my own way and understand that I was in a dysfunctional state.
Yeah.
And once I got there, then I had to figure out, okay, what happens next?
Yeah, it's really interesting. And I love the way that that's described. I've never actually heard it put quite that eloquently before. For me, I always say that so I found therapy because I was at the height of my profession and suffering from panic attacks and anxiety attacks. So the year that I made the most money that I had ever made at that point in time was the year that I had my first panic attack. And I went to therapy because I didn't know about coaching, right? I had no idea that that world existed. And I went to therapy and they gave me tools and resources to handle my panic attacks. So they would happen, and then this is how you respond to them. And it was when I found NLP in the coaching world that I learned what events in my life were causing the panic attacks and how to reframe that. And and I say all of that to say that without therapy first, I wouldn't have had the tools to put those panic attacks at bay to be able to dig into the emotions.
There are clients that I've said, you're not ready for me yet. Mm-hmm. What are you talking about? You need therapy.
And good for you. Good for you. Because, you know, it's always a sign of a great coach to me when they will say, I know that you're interested in this. And I realize that you would be ready to give your credit card to me right now. And I would be doing you a disservice if I took it.
Right. I actually fired a client once. He kept coming to the sessions, not doing his work, not doing his homework. And I'm like, I know I'm supposed to do it. I'm like, I'm sorry. I can't take your money anymore. I mean, I could, but who am I benefiting? You're not going to get anywhere. I don't need you. I did need the money at the time. He was like one of my first clients. And I was like, but it's not worth it for me to sit here every week and go through the same BS every week. Go get therapy. If you want to come back to me then, great. But you got some stuff to gotta work out.
You know, I've been fired by a coach before, and it was actually really refreshing because, you know, as a person, and I'm sure if you're listening to this, you can relate. And if you've never heard this before, think for a minute about what I'm about to say, because I promise you it'll hit. I know whether I'm ready for a solution by who I choose to call to talk about my problem. Mm. So there's a list of people that I will call that I know will buy into all of my excuses. The people who love me no matter what and will let me sit in my cesspool of shit and will listen to me bitch. Right. And then I have people that I will call, and when I'm done, they'll be like, so what are we going to do about it?
Right.
And so I know by who I choose to call whether or not I'm ready.
So those first people, they sympathize with you.
Mm-hmm.
Right. The second people, if they're really people who care about you, they're empathizing with you. They'll hear you. What are you going to do now?
Getting
into the box, that's sympathizing. If they're going to get into the box and be in the pity pool, pity party with you, great. Thank you so much. We haven't accomplished anything.
Well, and this is why when I'm talking to somebody about coaching, and I'm sure that you run into this as well, and they say, why do I need a coach when, you know, I can always just call my mom and talk about these things? And thank you. That's normally the response that I have. The reality is that the people who are closest to you are in the worst position to support you in your growth, because they use that phrase, which is on my, I have a list of swear words and none of them are inappropriate in normal day language. Like, I'll drop the F-bomb in any place and any time except court, because I like my real job. And that's not a swear word to me.
Right.
These are swear words. And one of them is, I love you no matter what. When somebody says, I love you no matter what, I'm like, I don't want you to love me no matter what. I want you to love me enough to tell me that these circumstances are not okay.
Right.
And our family is not always capable of doing that.
Mm-hmm. So I hear you, and you're 100% right. And my view as to why you don't go to your mother or to your siblings or to your close friends.
They're part of the problem.
That could be it. But here's what it is. Even if they're not judging you, in your head, you think they are.
They're judging you.
And they probably are judging you. But even if they're not, you think they are.
Well, let's talk about judgment for a minute. Because that's an interesting thing for me. Judgment is an interesting thing. Because one of the things that we talk about often in the NLP world, and I know that ICF is very NLP based. So I know that they bring a lot of this in. So you're probably familiar with the term perception is projection.
Yep.
Have you heard? Yes. Okay, great. So what's so interesting about this, and I'm sure your clients' minds get blown just as much as my students do, that when you realize that what you see in somebody else is just a projection of what you feel about yourself. So when you say that person is judging me, like they probably don't even know that you exist. They're certainly not thinking about your actions as much as you think they are. When we understand that we can only see in somebody else what we think about ourselves, and they can only see in us what they think about themselves, like you could go down the quantum linguistics rabbit hole and the reality of like, what version of you is talking to what version of them. But suffice it to say that like, if we believe in that, and if we buy into the fact that perception is projection, then is judgment not this fantasy that doesn't exist?
That's deep. That's really deep. But yes, I hear what you're saying with that. But here's how I look at it. And this is also something I learned through coaching. What I say to you is about me. Mm-hmm. What you hear me say is about
me. I love that. I love that. One of my favorites to tell my students when they come to me bitching about somebody or something is your actions or your emotions are all about you and their actions are all about them, right? So how you choose to feel about what they did is all about you.
All about you.
But you know, this gets used in a manipulative way too, because you know, if we stand on this platform of nobody can make you feel any way, you choose your feelings, you choose control of your life. You know, I know that we've all been in relationships with people who have heard that at a seminar at some point in time, whether it's a friendship or a boss. And then you try to tell them where you are at with communication or a situation and like, well, I can't make you feel anyway. And you just want to drop kick them, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So like in your mind, how do we reconcile the difference between a trigger and an asshole?
Wow. That's a good one. That's a good one. So for me, this took a while for me to totally understand. And it started right before I went to coach training. They sent me a bunch of books to read, a list. They said, pick one or two or three books off this list and read it. And there was one there. And it said how many pages each one was. And there was one that was a short book. It was called The Four Agreements.
Such a good book.
And when I read the second agreement, which is don't take anything personally, it was as if Don Miguel Ruiz, the author of the book, had just told me a secret that my entire life people had been telling me, but until that moment I wasn't ready to hear it, right? And that was that I take everything personally. And that's when I started to going through coaching and learn that I needed to unbox the crap that was in there, that I was a people pleaser. Okay, to me, I never thought myself of as a people pleaser. I thought myself as, okay, I'm a guy that wants to make everybody happy and I like to have everybody like me, right? Then I went a little deeper. I take everything personally. That came out of that. Then came, I'm a control freak because I want to be people pleaser, right?
Yeah.
And then came, I need to have the recognition that somebody says, oh, Martin, what a great job.
Because I need to know that I pleased people.
Exactly. And when all these things don't click into place, the worst part of me comes out. The Mr. Hyde comes out. And that is I become a freak. I lose it. I used to call myself a nuclear reactor, because I wouldn't just react or overreact. It would be like a nuclear bomb went off, and now I had to go out and clean up all the fallout as a result of that. So how does that result to what you're talking about? It comes to, you have to look at that person and say, are they saying this because they care about me, or are they saying this because they care about themselves?
Mm-hmm. Interesting. What a powerful question. And even more important is to reverse it, right? It's so great to be able to say, is this person talking to me because they care about me, or are they saying this because they care about themselves? To have that be the filter that we run our communication through. If I'm about to give feedback to somebody that is 99.9% of the time unsolicited, am I saying this because I care about me, or am I saying this because I care about them? And right. I think one of the hardest things for me as a coach to begin to understand was that, as much as I truly believe that I can help provide people with the solutions to any point in life and business that they are in, I can't make them want it. And the more that I try to show them how much they should want it and how amazing this shiny thing is, the more I alienate them. And so there's this like need to be tolerant but unaccepted mm-hmm. of people's excuses, right?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
I'm not the place that bullshit goes to live and breed and be, you know, honored.
Right.
But I'll also tolerate that conversation, because as long as you're in a conversation with me, then there's some part of you that's ready for a solution.
Right.
Until we're ready to actually dig in. You know, the first few trainings that I did, I would offer discounts to everybody that wanted to come, because I wanted to eliminate the financial barrier between what I knew and the problems that they had. And what I learned was that all I was becoming was another check mark on their list of things that they had tried that didn't work, because that financial investment is them finally saying, okay, I'm ready. I'm right. in. This you is worth it yourself. For me to solve.
And then.
Right. Right. And then somebody said to me, because very much I was on this pedestal of, but I want to help everybody, and I can help everybody, and I can do this, and I can do that. And so through the filter that you just said, me offering a discount had nothing to do with them and everything to do with the resources I thought I had that could help them. Right. right. And then my coach looked at me one day, and it was like, if you've ever coached with anybody, if you're listening to this and you've ever coached with anybody, if your coach is good, then there has inevitably been that moment where they've taken your breath away with this like punch to the gut. Mm-hmm. And she looked at me and said, I wonder how much you're helping somebody by telling them that they're not worth investing in.
Wow.
And I said,
a great line.
Fuck you and okay.
That's so good. That's so
fuck
good.
You and thank you. And on my way we'll go. So, yeah. You know, I love your directness. I love the way that you approach coaching. I love that you have this certification, although, you know, I'm not a big believer in the fact that certifications are required. I think what is really interesting to me about a certification program is that, just like a college degree, means nothing, but it shows a commitment to growth and learning and knowledge
right.
that doesn't come otherwise, which I think is so incredibly important.
Right. But for me, the certification means you've gone through the journey. That's what it is. Just like having the degree of being a lawyer, you couldn't have woken up yesterday and take the bar exam and passed. You have to go through the process.
We have to be able to agree that there are people who make it through the process that don't have the desire and the ethics to be great coaches. 100%. Right?
You'll find them in every industry. No question.
Yeah, 100%. And I think what's so interesting is that the coaching industry is so unregulated. We all deal with that. And I'm not saying it should be regulated. The fact that it's unregulated is the reason that so much greatness can come out of it mm-hmm. Without restriction. But with that comes a zero entry, a zero barrier to entry, right? And so, you know, each person, as you're interviewing coaches, should be determining what's important to you. Is a certification important to you? And if it is, make sure that you get that. Are results important to you? And for God's sake, if results are important to you, don't trust what they put in marketing on their website.
Oh, yeah.
I don't trust online marketing to save my life. When I learned as a new baby attorney about 10 years ago, when I learned that you can send review requests through a company that will not post the negative reviews and only post the positive ones, I was sick to my stomach. Wow. It's so ridiculous to me. So I bring this up all because you have taken everything that you know and everything that you've created and everything that you've learned, and you've created this wonderful Architect of the Warrior's Life Code. Can you talk about what that is and what people could accomplish with that?
Okay. So what happened is, here I am. I graduate from coaching school, from training, and I get my certificate. And I decide, okay, what kind of a coach am I going to be? And I decide, because of an interesting story, which I'll tell you real quick, is I go onto Facebook and I'm on a Facebook group, a group that's saying, you know, if you're going to become a successful coach, you've got to make sure that everything is clean if you're going to use Facebook. So go on Facebook and make sure that there's nothing stupid on there. Make sure that you're updated on all your things. And I went, I was like, oh yeah, I'm divorced now. So I switched it to divorce. Within 24 hours, I get a message, text message from someone from my community saying, now that you're divorced, are you ready to start dating? I'm like, Kelly, I know you forever. You're married. She goes, not me, stupid. I go, what do you mean? So she says, let's talk. So I get on the phone with her. She goes, I'm your matchmaker. I'm like, excuse me, what is this, Fiddler on the Roof? Should I start thinking matchmaker here? What the heck is going on? So I come up from a very small, close-knit Jewish community in Brooklyn. Okay. And when there's singles, there's this group of mostly women who go out there and help you find somebody. So she calls me up. She goes, do you think you're ready to start dating? I said, well, now that I know you're my matchmaker, I don't know. And we talked for about an hour. And in that hour, she says to me, I never met a guy who's just come out of divorce, who's so well put together after their divorce. I said, well, I guess it's all the coaching I've gone through for the last year. She goes, well, then that's what you should do. So I became a divorce recovery coach.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, because I help people recover from the emotional pains, emotional roller coaster that they're on, so that they can put the past behind them, find somebody new, if that's what they want, and have a happy life. And I did this for a few years. And I wasn't very successful in it. I was a little bit, but I wasn't making enough money to be, okay, this is all I'm doing. And I still had a job that was a dead-end job. And I did that for a few years so that I could pay my bills, because I moved out of my house. I moved back to New York, into my mom's house. Thank God my mom was married with living somewhere else. But I had my mom's house, and I was had my kids every other weekend and all that. And I was coaching here and there. And one day I realized that I wasn't being coached because I thought I couldn't afford it. Right? Because I had no money coming in. And then I was on Facebook one day, and a friend of mine's like, I just lost a ton of weight and I'm feeling great. And I'm doing these 25-minute videos. So I reached out to him and I said, well, what are you doing? He goes, oh, I'm doing these videos called Beachbody and T25. I'm like, yeah, well, I got to start losing weight. I got to start taking care of my health. He says, and I'll coach you. I'm like, what do you mean you'll coach me? You buy the program and I'll coach you. We'll do it through FaceTime. We'll do it on Facebook Messenger. I'm like, all right. He says, take a picture of yourself. I'm like, oh, no. He goes, take a picture of yourself without your shirt on. Like, okay. Anyway, and he's coaching me. And I'm getting through this. And in 9 months, I lost 65 pounds.
Good for you.
But what I also did was I started being coached again. I started eating right, reading the right things. And I got my head out of the, I can't do this, which is another cop out. And I was making bad choices and I had to live up to it, saying, I choose not to. So I started changing all these things. And I even, if you haven't figured it out by now, Amber, I'm ADHD. Okay. I wasn't diagnosed until I was in my 50s, but I am ADHD. And one of the things I started doing was meditating. Could you imagine an ADHD guy meditating?
You know, it's, I can, because I am a type A attorney that really enjoys control. That somebody, actually the coach that fired me was a spiritual coach, spiritual and health coach, because, she'd be like, do some breathing work. And I'm like, I breathe. She's like, no, slow down. And I say, do what? Right. Like, why? My entire life, I've been trying to figure out how to go as fast as possible. Right. And now I pay you for solutions and your answer is slow down. Like, what the hell kind of witchcraft is this? Right? Yes, I get it.
And, so here I am. I'm meditating. And I'm like, I'm doing the guided meditation, headspace with the English guy's voice in my head. And I'm like, when is this going to be over? But one of these times I had this download of information that I was loving my life and I was loving everything I was doing. And that's what I wanted to do. I wanted people to understand that they could do this too. And in this time, by the way, I started dating, right? Because, you know, I had my matchmaker. But I started finally feel better about myself that I was okay to go out and date, because through this process, I went from getting divorced and thinking that nobody would ever love me again, realizing that I was feeling that because I didn't love myself.
Yes. And
why didn't I love myself? Because I didn't even like myself. So I can understand why I got divorced, you know, besides all the things I talked about earlier. But I changed all those and I started dating as well. And I'd go on the dates, by the way, and I would be interviewing them about their values, because of coaching, I understood how important values were. They didn't know they were being interviewed. I was just having conversations with them, right? But I'm like, after I meditated for 10 minutes, I wrote for 2 hours. Mm. And out of that came out the word LIFE. And it's an acronym for Live Incredibly Full Every Day.
I love that.
And to me, it means being happy and also having a meaningful life.
I love that. Because book came out of too? Was that same idea, or did your book come later?
The book came later. Oh, the first book was on divorce. Second book came, this book came out only a few months ago. Okay. But it's based on
those that are listening and not watching the book that, what's the title of the book?
It's called, I'm going to screw it up because I'm from New York. It's called Warrior to Warrior.
You know, I love that title. I love that title so much, but it was really an unfortunate choice of words for somebody with a New York accent.
But how that came about is also part of my story. So the warrior port didn't come out till later. So here I am, I'm putting this together, this life project. And like I was saying, happiness is, people can be happy with no meaning, and people can be doing meaningful things without happiness. So I feel it's important to have both. Happiness is self-love, self-care, even selfish. Meaningful is selfless, doing for others. So having it both. So here I am doing this. And by the way, in the meantime, I meet a woman and she's checking off all the value boxes. And about a month into it, I said, I got to tell you something. I'm falling in love with you and you don't have to tell it back to me. And in June of 2024, which is a few months away, I don't know when this is going to, but it's, you know, evergreen type of thing. We'll be married for 6 years.
Oh, congratulations. That's absolutely amazing. I love those stories.
Thank you.
As somebody who recently just put herself back on the dating market, I love that. I've been single for 6 years because I needed to heal some shit. And
you didn't want to marry the same guy in a different body, right?
Right. Well, I certainly dated the same guy in multiple different bodies. So.
Exactly.
That's where my divorce coaching comes in,
by the way.
Oh, it's so true. And it's interesting because, like, I just started dating this guy recently and we've gone out on a couple of dates. We're still in the very, very beginning phases. And you know, in that beginning phase, and this is good to know for anybody who's dealing with any type of business relationship, I'm the type of person that I trust slowly. But once you have my trust, we're good to go. And while I'm trying to decide whether to trust you or not, my analytical brain kicks in and I'm looking for inconsistencies that will prove to me that I'm right to not trust you. Right. And so this guy, we actually just had this conversation this morning because he would make plans and then he would change them and then he'd make plans and then he would change them. And finally I'm like, dude, like just take somebody else to your plans because like I need consistency. And he's like, I thought you would enjoy this. And I was torn because the plans that he just recently changed to is something I would really love to do. And so I'm like, does my desire to go do this outweigh my irritation at the way that he's showing up? And so I sent him a message and I was like, just take somebody else. Like I'm unavailable. And he called me and he's like, whoa, what happened? And so we are talking about it and he's like, that makes complete sense. And
you gotta know it, you gotta communicate it, right?
Yeah. And you know, as I was talking to him, and this is what's so important about communication in general, you know, we're talking about it in a dating relationship right now, but this is the same thing that happens in business every single day, right? Is we communicate a certain way and then we just expect the other person to fill in the blanks. And it never works that way. And one of the things that I always tell my students is that there's no bad listening, only bad communication. At the same time, we forget that when we're the one communicating, right? Yep. And so what 100%. That phrase should really be is like, there's no bad listening, only bad communicating unless I'm communicating and then it's bad listening, right?
That's like politics. You know, I'd love to hear your opinion as long as it's the same as mine.
Yes, exactly. My mom, God, I love her so much, but she is so fucking stubborn. And I remember, not that I get it from anywhere. So I remember talking to her and I was like, Mom, you don't have to be right all the time. And she's like, I know that I don't have to be, but nobody's ever shown me how I'm not. I was like, thanks, Mom. Thanks. That's amazing. Well, I want to be respectful of your time. So as far as the book is concerned, where can people find it?
I'm having a blast, by the way. No problem.
Oh my gosh. I don't know where the hour went. So I'm having a total blast. Right. Where can people find your book?
So I've made it very simple. Okay. I have a website. It's called connectwithmartin.com. You could find my book, which will take you to Amazon to buy the book. By the way, I didn't get to talk about this, but that's on me more than you. I also made a card deck.
Ooh, okay? I like that.
Which is basically taking the book into little snippets and getting an idea of what my book is about, what my coaching is about. Because I also have a Warrior to Warrior coaching and Warrior to Warrior book. And by the way, we don't want to keep everybody on thing. Where'd the Warrior come from? So, so I put my course together. And then in 2020, the world falls apart again for the next generation of the world. Right? With COVID. And we're only going to be inside for a few weeks. Don't worry. So here it is a couple of months later and we're still inside. And I turn to my wife. I'm like, I go out every day. I'm like wearing the mask, putting the gloves on. I go, let's take your kids, her kids, my stepkids. And let's go to Manhattan. We live in Brooklyn. If you know anything about the city, driving down Fifth Avenue can take an hour. We did not miss the traffic light. That's how empty the streets were. So I'm looking, I'm like, where is everybody? What are they so worried about? And I came at that moment and realized the last 10, 12 years of my life before that, the divorce, the losing all the money, the weight thing, had prepared me for anything that came up in my life because I knew how to deal with anything that was going to come up. Like I went to Facebook, I said, guys, I get it. I want to show you how to go from being a warrior to a warrior.
I love it. I love it. So
I had to finish the story, you know?
No, I hear you. There's somebody who would have been listening that would have, and it's so funny because I know when they listen to this podcast, they're like, what podcast episode do I have to listen to where you finish the story that you started here? Like, I have no idea because my rabbit brain kicks in and I'm like, squirrel.
Right.
With that being said, this is the Break Your Bullshit Box podcast. So let's talk about that for just a second. Warrior to warrior, what is one of the biggest pieces of bullshit that lived in your head that you had to let go of to allow yourself to get to the place where you are thriving right now?
You know, we touched on it before. It's the phrase, I can't. Mm-hmm. That is the biggest piece of bullshit in the world. because the more you believe you can't, the more you won't. And instead of saying I can't, say, if you can't say I can, say, how can I? Mm-hmm. If you say I can't afford it, you're giving up. Say, how can I afford it? So that's the biggest piece of bullshit.
I love it. I love it. Like the story that you told about going to, you know, most people wouldn't think to go to somebody and say, this is how much I can pay you per month. They see the price and they're like, I can't make that happen. So I guess I'll just keep going down this road. Right.
Right.
I love that. If you
want it bad enough, you'll figure it out.
Exactly. Connectwithmartin.com. We'll put that in the show notes. I am really looking forward to continuing to connect with you and hearing about all the amazing things that come. So thank you so much for spending some time with us today.
Well, thank you so much, Amber. This has been so much fun.